You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Yes, what you eating, Ngozi?
Oatmeal with peanut butter.
Okay, come That's on. It. Yeah.
I worked out. I just came to work out.
You worked out this morning already?
Yeah.
Come on, fitness. Okay, will you just train me? Will you just train me? Like, I go to Equinox.
No, I won't train you.
Why?
No more labor. I'm not doing labor this year, 2022. I'm not doing any extra labor. I'm sorry. Black Man.
You were a fitness trainer.
I was. I was an awesome fitness trainer. I was very good at it.
And you wouldn't even want to make a buck?
No, I have bucks.
You know what? She said, "No, I have bucks. I don't need your extra bucks. I don't need your little coins."
No, I don't.
I have the bucks. There's only one place to learn the latest. There's only one place to hear the greatest. There's only one place for your information. It's the Awkbook Podcast. Awkbook Podcast. Okay.
No other host like me. Come check it out. You'll see.
All right, y'all. It's a brand new episode of Off Book presented to you by Broadway Black. We're ready to hit our mark and ready to do it right now. I'm Drew Shade.
I'm Ngozi Ayawu.
I'm Kim Exum.
And here we go, y'all. It's time to go off book.
Kim, Kim, Kim.
I know, right? Kim is like halfway here and halfway not. She has real life obligations today. Furniture is coming. Her child is off to school. They in school. Oh, it's January. I'm like, are they in school? But I'd be forgetting. Like, I think all the time it's summertime because I'm no longer in school. But it's actually wintertime. And you guys are cold, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm freezing. It's very cold in here and I don't understand what's going on with my heat. So
I am in Vegas, so it's not as cold. It is cold, but it's not as cold. You guys had a snowstorm, and I missed the whole thing. I come back later on tonight. And
don't come back. Stay. There's nothing for you here. Stay
is there. It still snow outside? Is it melted yet?
No. It's melted. Oh, where I'm at, it's melting.
It's melting, but it is not melted.
Not melted.
Okay. Well, I'm hoping by tomorrow, by the time I get there, it'll be a little bit more melted. And I won't have to deal with it as much because I have to go see MJ the musical tomorrow for the opening. I'm excited to go. I've heard nothing but great things about this show.
It's fucking awesome.
They also have sponsored all of our January episodes. You guys thought you didn't get any episodes for the month of January. Well, you're getting all four at once for Black History Month, for the start of Black History Month. You're getting all four episodes from January. We did record. We did do the work and have a good time. So go back and listen to those in bulk. And thank MJ the Musical for sponsoring our show for the month of January. And they will continue to do so coming up. And I can't wait to see the show tomorrow night, February 1st, as they open. So get your tickets to MJ the Musical. I think it's like the hottest thing on Broadway right now. Like, I haven't heard so much praise about a show in ever. Like, in a
I'll see your opening too.
Are you going to opening too?
Yeah, it'll be my second time. I want to go once a week.
Oh my gosh. So my friend Ayana.
It makes me feel good. It makes me feel good.
My friend Ayana, who does the What's Up Broadway podcast, has went one night and then called me like right after talking about it was so amazing. Then the next night, a show she was supposed to go to got canceled. I think she was supposed to go to Intimate Apparel. They canceled the press for that show. And so she went and bought tickets to MJ. And then she sat front row. And then she went and bought tickets again, like two more separate nights for front row, just so she can go like more. I'm like, girl, are you
front row? Jesus.
Yeah, like, is it that good? Like, I'm
it's a concert, but why front row? That's
yeah, I think it's more of a front mezzanine show. Yeah, I think it's a front mezzanine show.
I think most shows are mezzanine shows.
Yeah, I think the klutz seating, I think, is mezzanine for MJ.
Yeah. Okay.
You see, yeah, I think like to watch it like concert seating, it's like
either
you
like get to see,
yeah,
central awesome. Orchestra or like mezzanine. I'm like front row for any show to me is just too.
So like cool. It's like concerts. Are people standing up? Are they enjoying
it? People are standing up.
Really? Like throughout the show?
the show that I saw, people weren't standing up, but they were very much enjoying themselves. They were in church. People were having a great
time. Several times. I was just like,
I did too. If I could have thrown my shoe, I would have thrown my shoe multiple times.
I was outside of my body. Screaming.
And especially if I hear Ayana sing, that's the reason. That's the main reason why I need to go, is to hear Ayana sing.
I mean, she sings amazing, but that's not why the show is amazing. Like, she sounds great, but you're going to see Michael Jackson. She sounds incredible.
You're going to see the incarnate of Michael Jackson. Two beautiful, two very different beautiful incarnates of Michael Jackson.
Yeah. Okay. Beautiful. Well, everybody keeps typing it up, y'all.
It's really, I'm like, you know me, you know, look, first of all, Drew, you know me.
I know. That's why I'm like really surprised that this is the talk around it. Because that people are, you know, have been talking about protesting the show and how they don't know why they're doing, you know, Michael Jackson musical because of the allegations and the documentary that sort of thing. But, you know, Black folks, we are Michael Jackson down. Like, we just watched the Janet documentary. Did you ever watch the Janet documentary?
I haven't had a chance to.
Y'all got to get into that. Oh, my God.
I want to, but I just
haven't. Forgetting how much of a Janet fan I am.
Janet, all day. I'm more of a Janet fan.
Well, I posted on my story on Instagram when I saw her for the first time at an Out 100 event in 2018. And I lost my mind. I literally lost my, like, I didn't, and I wasn't expecting to do that. I knew Janet was coming. I knew that she was being honored. I was right by the stage, but I literally lost my mind. I thought that, like, I don't know. I had so much, I don't know. I'll just let you hear. Like, this is me seeing Janet for the first time in my life. And I just didn't know what to do. Like, why am I screaming like that? Like,
I had another friend who went to that event, and he was very, very shocked that she, like, he, again, everyone knew that she was going to be there, but that she showed up. And then to see her in person was just like a really,
and she was dressed down,
like, out of body experience.
Oh my God.
She's the one that the energy of it all was so like, why
am I screaming like that? One. And then two, where is that range? Like, I am literally in the rafters. Like, I don't even know if I have that anymore. Like, where is that range?
Not the range.
It's childlike excitement. Yeah, I don't even think I get that anymore, but I'm only screaming for two people, Janet and Beyonce. Like,
Beyonce's pretty major. Like,
oh my gosh, the first time I saw Beyonce in concert, like up close at Revel in Atlantic City, I lost my mind. I couldn't even, I mean, I'll be going back listening to the video. Like, I am crazy. I'm sort of embarrassed. Like, that I just.
Never.
I mean, that's a lot. It's insane.
It's out of this world. I mean, when I was a kid, I wanted to see Michael so bad. I was obsessed with the first concert I ever saw was that concert on HBO, I believe, in the 90s. Which concert?
The Dangerous Tour.
Okay.
Yeah.
One with television in the kitchen so I could moonwalk. Like, that was what I was like. And I was in elementary school, 6, 5, one of those ages. Like, what is this, 93? So I've always been like, I would have been one of those people like crying.
Yeah, people were exploding when he used to come on the stage.
Yeah, I would have been weeping because, so this, like, I think I said this last, this was like an opportunity.
It gives you,
I felt honored. It was very beautiful.
For me, it was like a gorgeous,
I feel like I'm going to scream right now just thinking about it, because if I've ever saw Michael Jackson in concert, I would lose it.
Well, sometimes you will, because you're like, moments where I was like,
you're like,
now my heart is beating fast, y'all. I'm excited. I'm scared.
The vocal sounds just like Michael. Yeah. Like, there are small moments where you're like, gorgeous. Okay, that was a little not you know, that might have not been exact, but that's just because, you know, we know the voice, we know. But that was literally like one or two times that happened. Where you're like, okay, now I can see that, oh, this is not really Michael. But then there are moments where you were like, this sounds just,
oh my God, like, I am.
It's really a show that is for the.
It's coming really, back. The rain is coming back.
It's really a show that is for the fans. Like, if you had any love, even with all the complication stuff, like with all that, because I definitely had my. I watched that damn special, and I was like, I can't listen to this music, and I have to sort of mourn my idea of him. You know what I mean? And mourn all that stuff. But there was something about even, and of course, being conflicted when the show was coming out. But then walking in there and seeing it and seeing the offering of it, I saw Issa Davis after, and we all are like, I'm conflicted because this was fire. But she was even like, you know, I feel like Lynn and this group of people like kind of gave him back to us in a way that we could take him. Do you know what I mean? Like gave him back to us. That the way that Issa just like described it. She was like, I feel like she gave him back to us.
I hate
and I was like, this, yeah, but- yeah.
That documentary didn't move me, not none. Oh my
God. Oh, I mean, it weirded me out a little bit.
It weirded me out, but then I started doing research, and the timeline and the court case, some of the things just didn't match. Like there was a lot of inconsistencies in the timeline and the recounting of things. And
well, that is why they are allegations.
Yeah, and I don't know. I think there's a high possibility
that he was inappropriate with there was children. A high possibility. There was just some weird shit in there. Mm-hmm. The fact that there were just children in the bed in general was just weird.
Enough. Yes.
You know, and the fact that the parents had absolutely no boundaries, but it was Michael Jackson, so you kind of understand that because
he was a phenomenon. Michael.
Like Jackson.
He was a phenomenon. Like nobody has ever reached the level of fame.
No.
And notoriety around the world like Michael.
But like, I don't know. I guess I choose, which sucks, like that we can opt to do that. Yeah, like I choose not to, you know, think about that part just because I was a big fan. And of course, like when I will watch anything that is Michael. So of course I watched the documentary and I was like really taken aback. But did I like delete his music from my catalog? Like, no, I can't.
And see, that's why I feel like, I feel so bad because I got rid of R. Kelly instantly.
Well, it's very different.
It is different because I feel like Michael Jackson is very much embedded in our DNA, you know? And there's like just studies on music and that music actually, depending on, depending on whatever music you listen to, but music is literally designed to give you more sympathy and empathy, period, right? Like that's just the way the music is designed. And like there is no artist that I can think of that is embedded culturally and worldwide and generationally, right? Mm-hmm. Like these kids who are playing him, we're not old enough to hear him any like live.
Right.
Yeah, we're not even old enough for like the top for where he was at his peak. They weren't even old enough to experience him.
Right.
They weren't even born.
They weren't born. And so like, and yet I'm watching like an eight, like I'm watching like a 20-year-old incarnate. Like it's crazy because he's so culturally in our DNA that it could be passed down. Like that interpreting him can be passed down. So it's super complicated because there is nobody who was so like, if he was not as popular,
mm-hmm.
it might be a different story. How we're able to take this up, right?
And with R. Kelly, people still listen to fucking R. Kelly. Have you been to Harlem recently?
That's true. That's also true.
They always sing.
That's also true.
We have an outside party or a cookout or whatever it is, but they used to be playing R. Kelly all the time in the summer. You know,
so if like, we had like a, I thought about this too. Like, if we had a king of, you know, Michael Jackson's the king of pop. If we had a king of Broadway, who would be the king of Broadway?
Stop.
We don't have anyone who works consistently enough.
Lin-Manuel Miranda. I mean,
you can say what you want to say, but like, money wise, award wise, consistency wise, and also give back wise.
Legend wise, like this nigga is.
Okay.
Hamilton is the stuff of legends now.
Yeah, I don't know what to tell you.
How many stars have come out of Hamilton?
Also.
He's Encanto, fucking Moana. Like, Mary
Poppins. He saved the drama bookshop.
And like, I hate that Encanto is so good.
He saved the drama bookshop.
He didn't have to do that. Niggas don't read books. Like, you know
it is beautiful. Y'all been in there?
I have to stand.
It's gorgeous. It's gorgeous.
You would probably let us record there.
Like, and that's complicated, right? That's also complicated.
It's complicated, right?
Right?
Oh, I hate like that. How did I ask that question? I hate it so much.
Look, because we're talking about
like the king of Broadway is Lynn and the queen is Audra.
Right, yeah. That's facts.
That's what it is. Oh, okay.
That's what it is.
Now I hate my question, but okay.
I mean, who are you thinking? Did you have anyone in mind?
No, I just thought of that. Nope.
Oh, I'm like, who
would be? I don't know who else could be. I mean,
my nigga dead.
Yeah, but I mean, so is Michael Jackson.
True.
I guess, but Sondheim. Yeah, I would say, like, I guess maybe he's the king, but then you have to say, like, well, what is the king? You know, what does that mean, really?
What are the qualifications?
Yeah, because he's not, you know, Lynn is also a performer. He's also a star.
Relax. He is.
Lynn is a performer, and he does have a very, like, he's a good quality in performance. I saw his Hamilton and it was not like, what the fuck
did you see that TikTok of the boy doing an impression of
Lynn? I love it. Yes,
it's amazing. It's spot on.
But that's the good thing about Lynn as an actor, is that he's able to capture himself, and that's literally what all actors are kind of striving to do. He just has very specific quirks.
Yeah.
That are like kind of obvious, like you're like, oh my God. But it's like, you know, he's able to capture his quirks, like a Christopher Walken, or like a fucking, like Johnny Depp has like a weird fucking cadence when he talks. Like,
you I'm still not letting people forget that he said the N-word multiple times.
When? I don't remember this.
Multiple times he's performed and said the N-word in songs. I do hear him when Latinx folks, people that are non-black, be saying
like Fat Joe. What do you mean?
Yes, Fat Joe too. I don't give a fuck.
I don't care.
Well, I mean, I'm saying I don't give a fuck if you like Latinx or not. You should not be, if you're not black, you shouldn't be saying it.
Fat Joe,
I don't care if you're from New York. I don't give a fuck about none of that. Like, I've gone off on a couple of friends that live here in New York that have said, "Oh, I grew up. You know, these are my folks. I grew up in Harlem." Like,
unless you're calling me a nigga.
Mm-mm.
Or you're in my presence.
No.
I just don't. I really just don't care.
I care. And Guzzi, you care?
I just don't. I don't. Haven't heard the archives. I'm not.
Yeah. Maybe if I heard it.
Archives.
Y'all gotta look it up in here.
It's like, you niggas ain't shit.
I don't. Like, I'm not. I'm concerned about the music. I'm concerned about the work. I'm not concerned about the watching him on TikTok or doing anything else. Or
Lord,
I'm not concerned. The work is good. Like, I still like Fat Joe too.
I do like Fat Joe too, but like, yes, I do like Fat Joe. You know, I'm lean with it, rock with it all day. What else did you guys do this week besides see Michael Jackson, MJ?
I went to the opening of Skeleton Crew.
Oh, how was that?
It was lovely, actually.
And y'all need to get tickets to that, because that is closing soon. That closes on February 20th. Like, that is a strictly limited engagement.
It was really beautiful.
And maybe not even 8 weeks, 6 weeks.
Yeah. I heard it was really, really fabulous.
It was beautiful. And the opening night, like, it was just interesting to, like, you know, the long road that I saw the original production 6 years ago at Atlantic when it was in the small, like, you know,
I did too. So has it changed since then?
Not really, not considerably. Okay. It's still essentially the same production, but just different actors. And then I remember seeing it again when it was on the main stage of the Atlantic.
Right. They did that. Yes, I did.
Yeah. See that. So like, it was one of those shows that like I've gotten to see all, and I've seen like
all incarnations.
I've seen it in LA. So it was like, it was just like, oh right, like to watch a playwright that you've known for a long time be at it, you know what I mean, and get her debut as a playwright, because it's really hard for us as playwrights, like, and she's McCarthy, she's awarded, and they still just kind of want us to make musicals for them, you know, so it was actually really rewarding to see her get a play that she's loved for a long time,
yeah,
up on Broadway, and to like remind myself, like, this is a long road, and it was beautiful, and it was really, yeah, and it was beautiful, and the actors were beautiful, and it's a beautiful play.
I keep asking you to do labor, but would you ever teach like a playwriting class? Would you ever I think you have such a unique perspective and a style in the way that you write that I think is sort of what I want to say, a rarity in a way that I think could sort of influence more people.
I've mentored and I've judged panels. I at the moment don't have the bandwidth to do like a full out teaching. I've been offered many times to teach at universities, but I like, you have to really sit and, in my opinion, read people's work and really like give them time. And I don't have, I'm still very much in the middle of my career in a way that I still haven't figured out how to like put my deadlines in, on time. Like, you know, and because I think I would say yes if I was just solely a writer, but because
I mean, I'm at least like, you're not losing projects like actor. Other playwrights.
Oh, I've lost projects.
I mean, from missing deadlines?
Uh-huh.
Really?
Yes.
Ooh.
Yes.
Do tell.
It's real out here. They're just like, we're just going to move on. Thank you so much. And just send it to like my agency. Like, it's like, because I've taken too long. Mm-hmm. So I've gotten things. Oh, I've quit because I'm like, I can't handle. I know I said yes, but I didn't mean it. I have too much to do. Like,
yeah.
So like, they'll flood writers with so much stuff on top of teaching, on top of, do you want to do this? And you'll feel pressed to say yes. Because also those advances are cute. You sign, you get like 10% of the advance. Ooh. You need that money. Mm-hmm. And then it's time to write. And you're like,
shit.
And you've signed a couple advances.
Mm-hmm.
Good. So I learned that lesson early to not sign a lot of
advances.
You give
them back?
I've given advances back. Yeah.
Okay. Like a book. It's like with the book thing.
Yeah. I mean, they haven't been like large amounts. Like I've gave one for a thing. I was supposed to do something for some like, for some project. And I was kind of like, I'm just not interested anymore. And my agent was like, really? Really? I was like, I don't. I'm like, I have other stuff to do. And I wasn't really that interested when I said yes, you know, and sometimes you just do that. So if I was to teach a course, it'd be like maybe the business of playwriting and writing. But at the moment I don't have, so I do like some mentoring on the side. I do have people hitting up my DMs being like, can you read this for me? And sometimes, and I'll do a once a month DM answer where I'll go, this person that I do not know that is asking me to read something that literally costs money to do. Mm-hmm. I will do. And so there's, and usually like I like pick out that clock, I'm like, oh, this is the Black girl, and I'll go ahead and read her play and give her feedback.
Oh, that's wonderful.
So I give people feedback and stuff like that periodically, but a whole course. I also feel like, though I do write, I feel like I snuck into it. because I acted first and because I didn't go to school for it, there's still a part of me that feels weird to teach it. I don't know.
Gotcha. Yeah, I understand that.
I could feel that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, because I didn't go to school for anything that I'm doing now. And people are always asking me, how do you build a brand? And can I just pick your brain? Pick my brain for what? Child, I'm just trying to survive and live. I'm just doing what my heart tells me to do. Shit.
I'm still trying to pick my own brain.
Right. Shit. Like, I don't even know what's all up in here. Can't even get it all out myself to use. Kim, what was going on with you this week? This work?
I went to work. I shot something at the end of the week, and then I went back to work.
You shot what? What'd you shoot? Can you talk about it?
I can't tell you. No.
Like, we can't even, like, anywhere near around it? And
on a podcast? No.
Oh, okay.
I cannot tell you.
I mean, can you say a TV show, a movie?
I can't tell you. I'm not saying anything. So, anyway, not a movie. Damn. In 2 days. No,
it might be a walk.
That would have been like a, hey, sir, can I help you? No, so I shot something in the week, and then I went back to work. I had a tough day yesterday. It was just very rough vocally. I think I'm a little swollen. It's just super annoying. And then I have, of course, I have auditions for musicals, which I rarely get anymore because no one's really making them. Mm-hmm. Like, they're not, it's not like how it used to be, you know. And I also just like don't really go in for regional things unless they're like new, so it's just like, okay, it's great, but having to sing all the time and speak all the time is a little much.
It's a lot.
So I don't know, I might go to the ENT if, you know, things don't just kind of clear up. But yeah, that's been the week. I've just been a little bit stressed and a little overwhelmed with everything. It's just constant, just moving.
Yeah.
All the time.
I mean, so, you are booked, Kim.
I am.
Like,
and I've been booked for a long time, but people don't.
I remember when you wasn't booked. And that's the glory. Hey, glory, hallelujah.
I remember that too. But, you know, people talk about Broadway a lot, and we talk about, you know, our stars, and we talk about
everyone doing their thing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when you do this consistently for like 4 and 5 years, like no one talks about that because most people who are stars don't do that. Because mm-hmm. A, they don't want to, B, they don't have to. Mm-hmm. You know, to constantly be in something over and over and over and mm-hmm. over and over and over and over again. They want to be in it for a little time to propel them to their award and their opportunities. But mm-hmm. like the heart of Broadway are the people who are doing it for 4, 5, 6, 10, 20 years, the same shit over and over again. It is a moving train that does mm-hmm. not stop. Mm-hmm. And you cannot get off unless you quit maybe you get a vacation or you book something else, but even then it's just like a fucking train. And it's sometimes like I feel I'm very blessed and I'm very thankful, but sometimes it is hard to evoke balance between that, trying to also move forward career-wise. Like I signed up for a class that, you know, I need to take a class for TV and film. There's something missing there for me. There's something missing there because I'm not booking anything. So I'm like, there's something missing. I'm just not super comfortable in this medium, you know, being on top of stuff and also being on top of my family. And
that's good that you can acknowledge that.
It's a lot.
Yeah. Take the moves to improve. That's what Rihanna's I love about you, Kim. I love that about you. You said Rihanna's what?
Pregnant. Rihanna, she's pregnant. So random, but I just found that out.
Okay.
I just decided to share with the world. I like Rihanna a lot. So
I like her too, and I'm upset that it's A$AP Rocky's baby.
Really?
He is a clown, a buffoon.
He's cute though. Know him.
He said something really ill about black women.
Teeth.
He said something really ill about black women some time ago. He has some really fucked up views.
He's a black man. They all say.
Oh God, that's not true.
It is. It's a little true. It's a little true.
He's a rapper, black male rapper from a city.
Sorry.
It's a given.
Sorry.
Oh, I hate that. I hate that.
We hate it too.
Black men are the fucking worst when it comes to black women. And we all know that.
We hate it too.
Yep. Okay. But anyway, good for them.
Yes, right. Anyway, I forgot what we were talking about. I'll say I love that about you, that you can acknowledge that there's room for improvement and also, you know, critique yourself just as you do anyone else. So I love that. This week for me, I am in Vegas. I came to Vegas to be with some friends. It was a time that I needed to show up for some friends of mine. My friend Renita, my best friend from high school, had her 35th birthday and she was coming to Vegas to celebrate. Her grandmother, who was like my grandmother, is not doing so well health-wise. And so keep her in your prayers. And I was going to fly home to be with her and her grandmother, but she was saying that she was going to be here in Vegas. So I said, well, let me just fly out to Vegas and meet you. And I also have another friend that lives here who I was in her wedding last year. It's the first time me being, you know, the man of honor in a wedding. And she lives here with her wife. And so I came to visit them as well. So it was, you know, two birds with one stone, showing up for my friends. And I just needed some time away. Little did I know that it was a space and time that I actually needed to be away from the city. God set me up in a way that became very clear to me later when some information was revealed to me. And it was a test and a trial for me to move through it emotionally. I am also 8 days sober. I've told you all before that I've tried to quit. I've talked about it on the show. Tried to quit smoking, you know, cigarettes, marijuana. I'll be very transparent and say I've done, you know, recreational drugs, a little bit of cocaine, some Molly, Percocets, you know, pills, things of that nature. You know, that's, you know, not no heroin or anything like that, but I have experimented with some drugs and done some things and self-medicated over the years. And I'm very open about that due to my anxiety and depression that has spiraled over the years and it has fluctuated and it's a roller coaster and it's a journey. And over the past 8 months, I've been in therapy as well as taking, you know, medication for, you know, taking antidepressants and ADHD medication. And so I've been experimenting with different types of cocktails. And I think I finally found something that works for me, because before, you know, the medication I was taking, I so desperately wanted to work. I was like, oh, this is going to be great. I'm going to take this. I'm just going to keep taking it. It doesn't matter. And the side effects were like killing me, where I was having crazy insomnia. I was, you know, staying up for 4 and 5 days, working all the way through, and then crashing for 2 days, where I literally was like sleep, could not get out of the bed, sleep for 2 days straight. Yeah, that it was just not healthy. So I ended up switching to something different. And that started last week. And that sort of was the catalyst for me, you know, quitting everything, because my doctor was like, you know, don't mix this with anything. We want to see if it actually works. So please do your best not to smoke, not to do, you know, drink alcohol with it, so that we can see if it actually works for you. And I'm so desperate to get better. I said, yes, I will do that. And I'm 8 days sober, y'all. I don't think I've been this sober since before, like, the pandemic, when I was, you know, auditioning for shows, and I did, you know, my Carnegie Hall debut, and, you know, I booked those shows right before the pandemic and was out in Virginia doing Dreamgirls, and I was like 2 months sober, to where I was, you know, like, really working out every day and feeling really good about myself and starting that journey. So, I'm back there, and it feels really good, because I've been wanting to get back there for a long time. And it's just been very difficult. So to be 8 days sober, to be clear-headed and open-minded, to see my path in front of me, feels really great. And also, I don't think that the information that sort of rocked my world would have, I wouldn't have been able to process it the same way. It hurt really bad. It hurt. And eventually I'll be able to talk about it in you know, sometime. It'll be a little while. As I go through this process, I'm going to be as open as I've always been. I'm going to be as honest as I've always been, as soon as I can. Yeah, and that's what I will say. As soon as I can, I'm going to spill it all. But right now, I have to, you know, be strategic and figure out how to make things work, and keep moving in the meantime, because God has not brought me this far to leave me. And so I'm trusting him, because if I trust myself, I would be in jail. I would be in jail. So it is only by the grace of God that I was not in the city, that I was not on drugs or doing some type of something when I discovered what I discovered. I'm holding on to that. And I knew that once I got through that sort of information, when I called you guys, I texted you guys and told you, and I cried and I prayed, and I said, God, I need you to take it, because my whole body on fire. I still am flabbergasted of how I made it through, because it was so much. Y'all know I feel so deeply. Y'all know I feel hard, like. And I think this was like the bottom of the barrel that I've ever felt in my life, beyond some of like the scandals that I've gone through publicly. This was that. And it's part of my journey. And that's all I'm going to say. It's part of my testimony. And I will survive this as well. I will keep moving and going. And I'm proud of myself, y'all, because this is major growth for me. I'm proud of myself. I sort of reconnected with my dad too off of this, you know, this particular thing, in a way that I really needed. I really needed my father. I really needed my father. And he showed up for me. And, you know, I told you I've been in a rough space with my parents for a couple of years. And his medication also has me feeling stuff that I sort of pushed down, that I didn't realize I was pushing down. And I miss my mom. I miss my mom, y'all. And I haven't said that in 2 years, because I haven't missed her. But something about, you know, seeing some pictures of us, you know, I was younger and during Christmas time and stuff, and me just going through things by myself, and I'm not gonna go too deep on it, but you know, there are times that I miss my mother and I wish that we had something better, that I could be in relationship with her in a healthy way. And yeah. So it's just a lot. It's a lot that I had to deal with this week. And I also had to keep showing up for myself and keep taking care of myself. And so how do you do that when I'm so used to just not being able to move when I feel those things? And in this case, I was able to, I had to get up. I had to get to the gym. I had to show up for my friends in town. I had to do other things. And I think this is one of the first times in a long time that I was able to actually move in the midst of sorrow, in the midst of despair. And that's new for me. And so, yeah, this week was a learning week. It was a learning week. And I this is the end of my sabbatical for January. Tomorrow I head back to the city and I start, you know, hitting the ground running. I go see MJ the Musical opening night tomorrow. I have to work the red carpet. I have to go to Skeleton Crew the next night after that so I can see it before it closes. I'm going to On Sugarland on Saturday. You know, the Broadway Sessions Black History Month concert that I always love to go to every year is on the February 3rd on Thursday. So it's just a lot happening that I have to move. And I don't think I've ever been able to, the moments, like, Ngozi, you know, the moment something despairing happens to me, I am out. I'm down. I'm off. There is, you can't tell me. I'm not doing shit. I'm not posting shit. I'm not showing up for shit. I can't talk to you. I can't write an article. I can't do an interview. And despairing shit happens in our lives all the time. I don't know. It's just, I feel a sense of freedom in a way that I have never felt before, to be able to move. That's a privilege. I don't know how. Am I explaining this right?
Yeah.
Okay.
We're just listening. We're just listening. We're just holding space.
Like I'm just talking to myself.
Holding,
for so long.
We're just holding. We're just.
Yeah.
Holding
we're just holding the space.
I feel like I'm just talking for so long. I'm just like.
You are, but we are just holding a space for you to talk.
I appreciate it. Yeah. This is new for me at 34 years old. I am learning how to adult, I guess, and. There is a sense of shame that comes with that, you know, but I have to remember that I can't beat myself up for not knowing how to get help or not having help or, you know, taking the time to taking so much time to get help or whatever. You know, I have to operate in the now, and you know, there's a sense of shame in that, and I'm trying to release that. My friend told me the situation I'm going through. She was like, I just really want you to know that this has nothing to, this says nothing about who you are. This says nothing about who you're not. It has everything to do with something else. And so, yeah, it's just a life lesson week. And also being 8 days sober. So, yeah, so when I get back, I'm going to, start going to AA meetings. Well, I went to one with a friend of mine and it really sort of changed some perspective for me. So I think I'm going to start going there and I'm visiting that on Sundays, in Soho. Oh, I shouldn't, should I? Say, can I say that?
You can say whatever you want. You just can't say names, but you can say where you go to meetings. They also have them online. And why are you on a one in Soho? Why don't you go to one that's like near your house?
Because I liked the energy at this one. And when I see white people in despair, it makes me feel better. I don't know how to.
Well, they do be at all of them, you know, like.
No. At this one, this be like the people that live in Soho and they be having money and they be having problems.
Well, yeah, that's how addiction be working. Yes,
I know. And I'm sorry, but that makes me feel better when I hear their stories and they qualify and they talk about their life and stuff. And then. You know, and then also I feel like maybe I need some, you know, some white friends that, you know, are possibly on the same journey. And so like, this is my connection to white people in a way that I don't normally have. You can also go wherever. Like, I know I can. I know.
Okay. I'm like, you could do online. You could do, I don't know, but
I'm so serious.
But I know that.
I know you're serious, but it's still funny to be like, I need white people suffering to make.
Like it encouraged me to keep going. Like.
AA is fucking weird. I mean,
I want to encourage your healing. I want to encourage your healing.
I've never been to AA.
Is that, does that sound crazy? Do I need to believe
that? No, it actually doesn't sound crazy at all. It's just funny.
It's just what it is.
Funny.
I mean,
it's funny because it's true. And it's just
true. Like, I don't want to hear other Black people. It makes me sad. I don't want to see other Black people suffering.
I feel like, I don't know, like, to me, like, I've never been to AA because I'm not an alcoholic, but I have been to Al-Anon. And
what's that?
Al-Anon is for people who are impacted by people who are alcoholics.
Okay, got you.
So it is the same thing. It is just for people who are affected. And there are a lot of participants in AA at Al-Anon because a lot of people who are alcoholics
were affected by.
Were affected or have friends or a spouse or a sibling or a child or whatever. It is the fucking weirdest thing, but I mean, it's a tool for sure.
Yeah, that's why I need a tool. I need guidance.
To me, all the stories are so. It was one of those neutralizers for me. Like, it didn't. I actually found myself like, I didn't really look at race at all, really, because the stories were so crazy. Like,
yeah,
the things that people were going through. Or people who like as people who were alcoholics and then had to go to Al-Anon, or people, the wives and the whoever. I mean, the shit was, when I talk about a fucking equalizer, it was, as far as the stories themselves, we can get into the politic of addiction on another fucking day. But as far as like the emotional strife, the shit in the home. It is oh my God, it's very powerful. And it's like, I felt like I was frozen. Like, I felt like I was just like I've went on the internet during the pandemic and in person or whatever, but it is, I don't know. I had the opposite reaction, but I know AA is a different experience from hearing about people who have attended AA. It is, but a lot of the meeting structure
is the same, right?
Is the same.
Well, I went, and after I left, I went and bought 2 bottles of wine and got drunk as hell. But it resonated with me so deeply that it's not a qualification
to be sober in AA.
But also, like, it was my first meeting. I was going to support a friend that was qualifying that day, and I ended up really having to be, you know, present and sober when I got there, because they don't want you to, you know, if you do go, they recommend that you don't speak if you have had any type of drugs that day. So I wanted to, like, if I wanted to speak, I wanted to have the option to speak if I, you know, went. And I ended up speaking and basically telling, you know, part of my story. And right afterwards, I went home and got 2 bottles of wine and got drunk and did a couple bumps of cocaine and smoked a couple blunts and thought about being sober that whole time.
You had a buffet?
You said what now?
I said you had a buffet.
I did. Because I had some left over. So I was like, if I'm going to go sober, I'm not just going to leave this. That's an addict for you. I can't just leave this here.
I can't just leave it. That is so interesting.
So I was like, well, if I'm going to start...
I can't do it. I can't.
If I said I'm going to start like thinking about being sober, I was thinking about being sober the whole time I was doing those drugs. I was like, I just have to.
Yeah, I feel like that's what most people be.
Yeah. So I was like, I got my little care package.
Last time.
I got my little care package together and I did those things. And then I said, you know what? I'm going to do this. And I just began. I'm not looking back. I feel good about it. I'm not looking back. And also the medication, I think, is really helping with that, because I haven't had a craving for a cigarette at all. And that is wild to me. But it also has been fucking with my appetite. So I know that I'm going to be like really snatched. And I also have to make sure that I eat. I have to be very mindful about eating and force myself to eat. So yeah, all of that's happening. So we're going to move right along because we ain't got that much time. Let's move on to hot topics.
We love to talk about so much shit, so now it's time for hot topics.
All right. This week in hot topics. Oh, I forgot to tell y'all, I got a call from Philip Boykin. Philip Boykin's in Music Man. Music Man is now not inviting critics before opening night, which is.
I saw that. I like that.
I love that. I do. I love it.
I love it. It's not done.
I love it. Also, they have. They don't need. What did they? Aren't they sold out until?
They're sold out. Yeah, they don't need.
Like, what does a critic have to say about their show?
Right. They don't need. They don't need reviews.
They do not need a review.
Yeah, they don't need reviews. They said, this show is already successful. We don't need you. You're not coming till after the show opens.
Yes, ban them. Thank you.
I wish we all had that power.
Now,
like,
do y'all feel that's what it used to be.
That's what it used to be. Yes. That's what regional shows do. Like in LA, that's what they do. LA.
Yeah. I wonder why it changed. I need to do research on why it changed.
The press got more powerful than the art form.
Got you. Okay.
That's what
I think. Critics were also going to pre-Broadway. Critics used to go also to pre-Broadway tryouts. They were going to pre-Broadway tryouts to pan shows.
Yeah.
So critics, literally, you brought this on yourselves. I just want to say that. You brought this shit on yourselves. The cultures of critics have real, it's a toxic fucking culture.
And I'm fine with that too, because now it doesn't, like, there's no real deadline on giving reviews. Like, I can still review the show, you know, after it opens. Like, I like that. I wish everybody would go back to that, because I'm tired of having to like rush to get the review done and before opening night. Like, fuck that.
I want the review done. I want the actual reader. I want a review done within the first week of.
So
I can decide if I want to see it or not. See it,
right.
If that's what I'm using as a deciding factor, but yeah, like reviewing during previews is just a setup.
Yeah,
you could literally cut. Like a whole half of an act if you wanted to.
Yeah.
And shows have now been forced because of this also shows, like I know for off-Broadway shows, we have much shorter runs, right? And so like, you know, theaters and institutions are worried about locking in shows like weekend of previews because that's when the reviewers are coming. And it's like, as a writer, as an artist, I want to be able to keep working until opening. And so like, yeah, but sometimes we're forced to be like, oh, this is the, we want to lock it in before the reviewers come. Mm-hmm. And I'm not writing my plays for viewers and for critics.
But the culture has changed
like in how we work, because we're working towards, oh, this is the weekend critics are coming. You want to come to that play. But the critics have become so powerful that we're working towards that. So yeah.
And you can technically change things whenever you want. There are these weird rules that we subscribe by that we all thought were rules. But once I did that Book of Mormon shit, I was like, oh wait. Niggas can change whenever they want. People can literally change. They did it with Frozen too. They added like a whole new song. Rest in peace. They're not on Broadway no more. But you know what I mean? Like, you can literally change shit in your show whenever the fuck you want.
True.
Not for profit.
Okay, well, for the profit people.
Yeah, not for profit. And for the profit people, it's like after a certain amount of time.
But why is it different for?
Because it's just a short run. Okay. It has a lot to do with the short run. When a show runs longer, like a director can come in, give notes. Like a lot of like the rules are like directors can't really give notes after opening. But the actual thing is like they can do it like after a week just to make sure that the show is maintained itself.
Thoughts of a Color was changing well into the run. Like
yeah, they could change. Yeah. They could literally sit down and like after have a rehearsal time. And they can change the shit. If the producer's okay, then everyone's the producer. On the same page.
That's more of a producer thing. Sure. A producer can come in and fire an actor if they don't like the job that they're doing. Like Cameron McIntosh was infamous for coming in during runs of Les Mis and being like, who's that nigga? Fire him.
But then they gotta pay you out. But yes.
Yeah. Okay. I was talking about Music Man. That was the news of the week, them changing the review schedule. But Philip Boykin called me this week, so I'll be going to opening. I'll be styling him for his opening night. I have to design a custom outfit like I did for him for the Tony. So in 2018, when Once on This Island was nominated for Tony and he was nominated, I designed a custom tuxedo for him, which I love to this day. It was one of the most enjoyable things that I've done. You know, I'm not a fashion girl. I'm not in the fashion industry, but I do have, you know, a little bit of fashion roots. My mother was a designer in Chicago growing up. And I remember her telling us a story about her designing a dress that had buttons all the way down the back. And when she would go out in this dress that she designed and had made, people would follow her into the bathroom because it was so beautiful and wanted to know where she got it. And my mom, you know, is really into fashion and always has been. And that got away from her when she moved away from Chicago when she was 25. And so, 24, 25. Well, actually, don't give me the line. It might've been, around there when her 20s. I was born when she was 25. But that was, something that sort of felt like it connected me with my mom when I did that. And I was really excited and happy to do it. And it brought me a lot of joy. I also designed my outfit that year, that the jumpsuit that you see me wear from time to time with the gold and the black, tuxedo jumpsuit that it's very flamboyant, if you will. I wore it also to the Metropolitan Opera for Fire Shut Up in My Bones. And so I wear that from time to time, and I like, designing things here and there. And so Philip is trusting me to make him look good for opening, and I'm excited to do that this week. I got 10 days. It's on February 10th. So pray for me that we can, achieve, and I'm sure that we will achieve it very well. And he trusts me. So I'm excited to do it. It's going to be fun. So look out for that. Obie Awards adds digital eligibility for virtual audio works. The award ceremonies are changing this year. They're also including awards all the way from 2020, digital stuff from 2020 and anything that's opened all the way up until 2022. So that's 2 years worth of awards. The Antonios will be doing the same thing. I think we've influenced these awards show very much so, and I'm very proud of that. And I look forward to being in company with them this year. And I keep saying that because I want you to know it's coming. I've been in a lot of talks with producers, and it's coming. And I'm excited about it. What was I going to say? The documentary. Maurice Hines is doing a documentary that is coming to Stars. It is called Bring Them Back. It is about, Let me see. The award-winning documentary will stream February 1st. Directed by John Carluccio, the film paints a portrait of the Tony-nominated song and dance man following the entertainer from his tap dancing childhood to today. This is Maurice Hines, brother of Gregory Hines, including an exploration of what it means to be Black gay man in show business. I love that. Has Maurice Hines ever came out as gay publicly?
I never knew he was gay. But I also don't think I ever really thought about his sexuality.
I don't think so. I've ever thought about it either, but I don't know if this is the first time that I'm actually reading that this is his story. I think that's very interesting. In the documentary, it would include interviews with Cheetah Rivera, Mercedes Ellington, Debbie Allen. And share tales from his lengthy career, including Broadway shows, a co-starring role in Francis Ford Coppola's The Cotton Club, and his relationship with his brother, the late Gregory Hines. As an overarching theme, I hope viewers gain a better understanding of the nuances of familial love. I'm really interested. They're supposed to send me a screener of this. I need to remind them. But this was executive produced by Debbie Allen and Charles Randolph Wright, who directed Trouble in Mind on Broadway. I'm interested to see this. The film has already won jury awards at DLC NYC, the Dumbo Film Festival, and the American Black Film Festival. So come on, Maurice Hines, let's get it. I've been hearing about this, but I haven't seen it yet. So they need to hurry up and send me my screener so I can talk about it some more. So it's set to broadcast February 8th. February 8th at 8 p.m. on Stars. So, you can stream that. You can begin streaming it February 1st, tomorrow. On the network, and the broadcast is set February 8th. Okay. Playwright Nicole Salter joins Nolan Williams Jr. as co-writer for Grace, the musical. I saw a presentation of that musical. I really love the music from it. The book did need some work. And Nicole Salter and Nolan Williams Jr. together, I think, are going to really be able to handle that and make it something special. The new musical will make its world premiere at DC's Ford Theater in March. Speaking of DC Ford Theater, pray for me. Y'all got some auditions that, this medicine is helping me tremendously. The fact that I've been able to do self tapes and do work, Broadway Black stuff, and show up for myself and go to the gym and eat well and show up for my friends and actually have a normal life is crazy. Yeah, I love it. Wayne Brady is a chief creative officer of newly formed Freestyle Love Supreme Academy. I really don't know what that means, but congratulations.
Well, they have a school.
I knew they had a school.
Yeah, the Black woman who's on there who really is like giving me everything on that show, I believe they got her, like that's where they found her.
Yeah, Anissa Ford. Is that her last name, Anissa Ford? Is it Anissa Folds? Anissa Folds. I'm so sorry, Anissa. You know that you my girl. I don't know why I said that.
But yeah, I believe Anissa that they got Folds. Her from that academy. So yeah.
Awesome. I love that. Go with it. On Sugarland delayed their start, which I think is smart. A lot of shows are delaying their start. A lot of shows are, you know, pausing right now to make sure that everyone's safe. And I just think that's smart. Like, let's pump the brakes, what we should have been doing to begin with. But, you know, I support Alicia Harris tenfold. I love her work. I'm excited to see On Sugarland. So I go to see that on Saturday. Yeah, it's a lot happening, y'all. They announced the cast of Slave Play in Los Angeles. That's, you'll be able to see that out there. Begins February 9th at the Mark Taper Forum. You know, I'm always happy when Black people are working. Just be, you know, cautious that play is a lot and it's harmful. So see it at your own risk. Yeah. Broadway revival for Color Girls delays start too.
They still haven't announced that damn cast.
They have not. And I don't think they will for a while.
Like, announce the cast, y'all. I want to know who got it.
I do too. Also, speaking of you know, cast members, I don't know if we said this last time, but congratulations to Dennis Stowe, who is now Jafar in Broadway's Aladdin. He started shows on January 25th. Dennis is a spectacular. So congratulations to him. I think I saw him in what was it, Moulin Rouge?
I feel like he's been in every musical that's ever musical.
He works. he works. Yeah. Maybe it wasn't Moulin Rouge. I saw him in something else. Don't give me the line. Yeah, maybe it wasn't. Don't give me the line. But Dennis Stowe, he works. I see that name often, and I'm proud of him. Congratulations, brother! I can't wait to see your performance as Jafar. I look forward to coming. I think that's it, y'all, because I got a heart out. You know, I'm. And she's. Look, you hear that? She's messaging me right now. We thank y'all so much for a brand new episode of Off Book presented to you by Broadway Black. It's been a wonderful episode, y'all. We've been off book, and I am Drew Shade.
I am Ngozi Ayong.
I'm Kim Exum.
And we out, y'all. I love y'all. See y'all next week. Bye. Happy Black History Month. Woo woo.
Bye, Black people.
Bye. Bye, y'all.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.